Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 132, and the name of the podcast is The End of Rendering. And I'll explain that in a bit. Before we do that, let's go to some announcements. It is, SIGGRAPH is coming up, guys. It is around the corner. A lot of stuff going on. By the time you guys get this podcast, I know that I will be in town with a lot of our guys from Bulgaria will be here, and we've got enormous amount of stuff going on. Vlad will be here. We've got a lot of planning to do, lots of announcements. One of the big things I want to pump and talk about is something that's going to go happening at SIGGRAPH is called Meet Mike. And Mike, in this case, is two things. One is it's Mike Seymour. And two, it is also a digital human. And that digital human data set that is being used for the Meet Mike is part of the WikiHuman project. So if those of you who've been wondering what's going on with WikiHuman, there's a lot of things going on. So go check, go to FX Guide, actually. Go to fxguide.com and check out Meet Mike. There's an announcement there, and you'll see that there's a bunch of things that can happen. So if you're going to SIGGRAPH, and you have time to go to the VR Village, there's a schedule that's on the FX Guide article that tells you about some of the things you can do to find out about Meet Mike. I will also be recording a live podcast or in front of an audience like I have done at other events, where I'm going to be talking to Mike Seymour and Jay Bush, who are both members of the Digital Human League, and we'll be talking about where we are, where we got in front of the Digital Human Project, what's happened in the last couple of years, because there's been a lot of things that have developed and it's sort of been under the radar. People have been wondering what's going on with WikiHuman. So it's definitely alive and well and doing some amazing stuff. And SIGGRAPH is going to be a big part of it. There's also going to be a panel, which I'm on, which is on Wednesday, I believe at 3:45. And I forgot which room. I think it's room 411. Where I'll be talking as well about digital humans. So lots of stuff going on about digital humans and about the WikiHuman project this SIGGRAPH. So definitely go check it all out. I'll be happy to answer some of those questions. I'll be looking forward to it. I'm really happy that we got all these amazing things going on. Okay, so why is this podcast called The End of Rendering? Really, it was a conversation that I've been having with Lon and David for a while and just sort of thinking about the future of rendering. And the fact is that we really believe that the term rendering is going to go away because the process is not going to be the same as it used to be. And there's a lot of parallels that we see between the idea of what happened in the world of photography and how that world has been completely turned upside down based on the advent of cell phones and cell phone cameras, which have really sort of revolutionized in no small way the idea of what a photograph is and what it's used for. There's still plenty of professional photographers out there, but there's enormous amount more pictures being taken, and those pictures are done with extremely high quality equipment that's available to the masses. So I believe there's parallels between that and what the rendering world will do, and they're not going to wait for renderings anymore. They're just going to be instantaneous. They're going to be done. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting podcast. It's an internal podcast. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So if you guys have any thoughts on it, go ahead and leave them in the comments. You know how to reach us on Facebook, CG Garage Podcast, all one word on Facebook. And let us know what you think. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Take care, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Everybody in Chris's Rolodex is on vacation. So now you're stuck with us goons.
But
episode number 137 and a half.
Ha
It's good.
It's very good, yeah.
It's working because we're already recording. Yep. All right, David. Thanks for being in town.
You're welcome, Chris. I came here just to see you.
Thank you for being here, friend.
Yeah.
Let's just do a podcast about 80s theme songs.
80s theme songs? Like Greatest American Hero?
Yep.
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I could.
No, it's all right. I mean, you take the good, you take the bad.
Anything by Alan Thicke.
Anything.
You celebrate his entire catalog.
What was the
album? Or how about we just sing the ones like the Hill Street Blues, you know, like. Dun, dun, dun,
no, dun, we need ones dun, with dun. Words, Chris. We
with words? With, I don't know. I was just going to do like.
How come?
I'm just going to go, dun, dun. Oh, that's 90s.
I went to this jazz performance of this guy that did the soundtrack to Taxi.
Yes.
And that was the grand finale to the concert, was like this extended version of the Taxi.
But such a loopy song.
Opening. Yeah.
The Danny DeVito just come up on stage and like give you a little wave.
People went crazy for it. It's about as exciting as this podcast could get. Yeah. You know, since Hollywood is rehashing absolutely everything, why is there not a new Alf movie? Where is the rebirth of Alf?
It's true.
Because there's fur now. Hey, Willy! Like, you got... it's ripe. That is ripe.
I think Peter would have a problem with the cats.
I think you could be cast as Alf's dad now.
I could, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you even need to go CG? I'm sure the puppet is sitting in storage.
Were we talking about Joey Suzu? Wasn't he on Alf?
Was he? Was he a neighbor on Alf or something?
I don't know.
People are bummed because it was canceled and they had a grand plan, I guess, to end the series, and it just kind of ended.
Right.
For those that followed the dramatic timeline of Alf.
Right. The episodes actually connected to each other.
Yeah. I think we were the only family that watched Alf.
No, I watched it, but I didn't understand it at that level.
I didn't really care. I lived in another country.
I had a windshield cooler thing, like a foldable cardboard thing, and it was Alf sitting in a lawn chair with sunglasses, drinking iced tea, saying, "Cool is a state of mind."
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
You didn't want
I had a driver's license, and I had an Alf window shade.
To keep your 20-sided die hanging from the mirror cool.
This furry 20-sided
die. This puts you in perspective, David.
Yeah.
This definitely does put you in perspective.
Junior college.
I'm glad you're writing for us.
I mean, they sold those things. They made them.
Yeah, they made them. And somebody bought one.
Wow. Spencer's? Yeah. Was it Spencer's?
I think I got it like a Walgreens sort of a... Like
Walgreens.
Yeah.
Mainstream.
Yeah. Was it a bacon, Lucky, and tomato sandwich is what Alf always wanted because Lucky was the cat. Bacon, Lucky, and tomato.
Okay.
Underrated show. That and Small Wonder.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Small Wonder was awesome. Vicky?
She was such a great actress.
bring back Small Wonder.
I mean, it was basically the prequel to Westworld.
And T2.
I never thought of it that way. Small Wonder was the prequel to Westworld. Oh my God.
Before it all goes wrong.
Yeah. This is gold. We're leaving this all in.
Nope.
All right. So we got a couple things to discuss.
Was there an Elf cartoon?
There was an Elf cartoon.
Yeah, because there was a Punky Brewster cartoon.
And there was a Ghostbusters cartoon, too.
Well, I mean, Ghostbusters was at least...
Good. And the Ghostbusters cartoon was good.
Yeah. I had a roommate that would...
Well, do you think they made a cartoon because cartoons could only be played on Saturday morning back then? And so they wanted the kids to still be hooked to Elf and they wanted to watch it on a sitcom?
I'm sure they did some kind of market research.
Right.
But I had a roommate that would do the Glomer voice from Punky Brewster. And I still remember he'd go, "I'm Glomer, Punky's friend." It's the only thing I remember from the Punky Brewster cartoon.
And Glomer was not in the...
He wasn't in the show.
He was created for the cartoon.
He was basically their version of Kazoo from the Flintstones.
You always have to have like a Kazoo, a Glomer, or you have like, what's his name from Buck Rogers, the Beady Beady Beady.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You have to have some... Or Snarf. Remember Snarf from Thundercats? What was that?
Yeah, who makes this shit up? We should just, let's just make up our own.
You have to have like some cute little animal thing. Even in Captain EO, there's like a cute little animal thing that's following Michael Jackson around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got Groot now.
Groot's it right now, isn't he? He's an awkward teenager now, though. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah. He grows on you, though.
Oh, I see what you did there.
And thanks for listening.
Yeah. Jeff, that's for you. You deserve it.
Okay. All right. So I want
to... Want to do podcast intro?
No. We want to do a whole podcast. You're in for the long haul, my friend. So Vlad... you remember yesterday I was talking about that TED Talk with David Sinek?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Simon Sinek. Not David Sinek.
That's his brother.
You're thinking of David Sedaris? David Sedaris?
No. Simon Sinek, he did that thing about the why, right?
Yeah. Not the YMCA.
No, not the YMCA, the WHY.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the why. And I was interested in it. I was like, huh, this is compelling. And it's one of the most viewed TED Talks out there, even though it's a TEDx talk, which is also interesting. It's a TEDx talk, yet it's like the third most viewed TED Talk.
Is TEDx like TED Extreme?
No, it's just when people rip their shirts off at the end.
Yeah, it's like American Ninja, like TED.
Skiing from a helicopter and giving
the TEDx talk. Are an extension of TED Talks, meaning they're not like of the formal TED Talks, but they're an extension of it. Anyway, so I was interested in the whole why thing, and I want you guys to hear this because this is going to lead to the rest of the conversation. So I was like, all right, great. I was like, I like this idea, the why. And I'll put a link up to the podcast, but to the TED Talk. But the point of it was like that leaders, instead of just thinking of what they do, they think of why they do the things they do, right? That's the thing. And they start with the why, and then they go down to the actual things that they do. So I was thinking about it, and I said, I wonder what Vlado's why is. Why does he do what he does? Because I don't really know. Sometimes you just never know it with Vlado, right? You know what I'm saying? You're right, Lom.
Yeah, I was trying to adjust the microphone and it collapsed. It fought back.
All right. So basically, I said,
it's a sentient being.
Lom, Vlado, I need to know your why. And this is my Skype conversation with him. And then he replies back. He's like, okay, I'll look at the video. And he goes, just for the record, I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
Just for the record, I don't like that guy.
Yeah. And then we have a discussion, which I pretty much interpreted down to he doesn't really. Where are the actual credentials of this person that he actually has to make these assumptions?
Or anybody who does it.
Right, who does this.
Any talk.
Any inspirational talk.
Yeah. So he said, he's of the, Steve Jobs, Emperor Has No Clothes. I'm like, I'm one of the guys who, like, when Apple gives a talk and they say something and everyone goes, yes, retina display. I'm like, wait a whole what? And I don't buy it, right? I'm the Emperor Has No Clothes, and that's the way that Vlado feels a little bit about the way he talks. It's like, okay, all right, buy it. But I still want to know what your why is. Like what makes you do what the things that you do? Like
your raison d'être.
Your raison d'être. Yeah, exactly.
Oui.
And so he said this is what his response is. Do you remember the scene from The Matrix Reloaded where Neo talks to the Oracle? I said, yeah. I do. So and he asks why she helps them. I said, kind of, but I forgot the main point. She goes, she gives two answers. The first one is, I love candy. The second one is that she is only interested in the future and she believes the only way to get there is together. So those are my whys.
And he said, and my why is because I love candy.
But he does.
Yeah.
That point is just as much valid to him as anything else.
I thought for sure you were going to say, he said, why not?
No, but it's true. I can see him saying that. Mm-hmm. But he feels that he does. If you listen to the way he acts, he's all about like being inspired by what people do and also helping what people are doing, right? Like that's what he wants to do. That's why he does it, right? It's all about working with people and making cool stuff.
Right. I mean, isn't that's why we do what we do?
It is. But I like the way he said it. His way was better than saying that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was very interesting. It's very, very interesting. But the big thing that, and we can bridge on that, the big thing I want to talk about is how we're going to destroy rendering. We're going to kill it.
Disrupt? Are we disrupting? We're doing more than disruption.
Well, it's just not going to be something you think about anymore.
What? The interesting thing about even the term, right, the terminology, is that it refers in most of the time to a process, right? There's like rendering is an active thing.
It takes time,
right? So it's like I'm going to go render something, and it's like I'm going to execute it. I'm going to wait, and then I will have something.
You're drawing a rendering.
We've seen it already. That part will go away.
Well, here's an example. And Boris always reminds me of this. Like, Chrome is a rendering engine.
Yeah.
Right? It renders the page for you of your web page. It compiles it. It knows how is everything supposed to do. And it has all this code, and it renders the page for you. It's not ray tracing. It's not scanlining. It's doing web. I forgot what it's even called now.
It's doing Chrome things. It's chroming it.
I'm not a web guy, so you guys can forgive me on that one. But anyway, it renders, right? And then when you play video games, it renders at 30, 60, 90 frames a second, whatever that happens to be. So that is something that will happen with ray tracing as well. Right?
Yep. I'm shaking my head up and down. Yes.
What do you think, David?
I think so too. I think what's weird to me, like, it's always the photorealism, and I'm waiting for the point where then you're just going to apply a filter if you want to do like a non-photorealistic.
Well, right.
Render, or like that app where you take your picture and then it sends it up to the cloud and then sends it back in the spot in the style of a particular artist or something like that. Like
deep learning.
Yeah.
Right. So that brings up an interesting point, is that you will need a lot of compute power to do whatever you're doing, even if it's ray tracing, even whatever happens. It's not all those things you do on your phone. Your phone is just a communication device to the cloud, right? When you call Siri or all those things, they communicate to the cloud and give you the answer back. There was an amazing, this is actually one of the things that I really started thinking about. It was a great article by Mott Walsberg on The Verge about the end of computing. And it's about what's going on in your home now. I used to have a big computer, right? Just like you remember the kitchen phone? Mm-hmm. So you used to have a kitchen phone, but it was a big computer, and that's the computer you would go to if you needed to do a few things, and you had a printer connected to it, and it had its own desk, and it had its own thing, and a heavy monitor. And then that slowly turned into a laptop, because it turns out that a laptop can do all the same things and is way more portable, and then you can move it around a little bit more. That turned into a tablet or a phone. Almost, you know, first a phone, then a tablet, and then pretty much just a phone or whatever. And now you have your, what do you call it? The asking tube?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Go to Alexa and ask it stuff. Like say, hey Siri, record the, remember to subscribe to CG Garage Podcast.
Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.
And just do that so that everyone who's watching and is listening on their iPhones will have them do that. But that's the thing, right? That's the computer. And it's not a computer. It's just a portal to the cloud.
Yeah. I mean, for us, like my 2-year-old, it's a member of our family.
Right.
Right. Like she's like, have Alexa play, you know, the bunny song or whatever it is. Like,
right.
And we have her by the kitchen table. So she thinks of Alexa as like a being that she can just ask to do stuff.
Right.
Which we're trying to get her to do politely by saying please and thank you and all of that. But
I'll explain to her that she doesn't need to do that when I'm over next time.
She did say the other day, one of the funniest things that I've ever heard in my life, she did say, Alexa, I have poopy.
Well, there you go.
And
did Alexa order diapers?
Alexa did not figure it out. She didn't do anything. I think she might have said, okay, okay.
You're okay. On your own.
Yeah.
You're on your own, kid. Ain't got no arms. But so rendering or ray tracing will eventually just be done by whoever wants anything to be done, in a sense. Like, just like you would say, I want a picture of a Coke, and it'll make one for you and render it for you on the cloud.
In some way.
Somehow, there's no reason why that's not going to become the thing.
Because we're seeing even AI render stuff by just amalgamating photographs now.
Yes.
And producing stuff, which is in its infancy and it's very weird, but
right.
That is a rendering process that's mm-hmm. not necessarily ray tracing. It's just,
yep,
you know, using existing stuff.
Yeah, and I think that means that, I don't know. Okay, so there's several implications to this, right? Let's look at the different implications. Creating material. Do you guys think that creating material or using a 3D application like Max or Maya or ZBrush or whatever will eventually just go away because there'll just be stuff available that people will use? Or do you think there's actually going to be a market for people to create a ton of material for people to use because it'll become readily available?
I think there's always going to be stuff to create, mm-hmm. but I do think that there will be massive amounts of content that people will just consume.
Consume.
Yeah.
3D
more,
content.
More than... You know, people will create on their own.
3D content.
3D content.
There's a part of it that's kind of a bummer too, though, because it's like if you're an artist, if you're drawing, and if you had the option where you could have your drawing just complete without doing anything, like you're feeling like you're not taking part in the process at all. I don't know. Like it seems like with rendering, especially
I hit the render button and I wait.
I mean, yeah, but if I could think something and then it would be drawn. It could happen. Great.
But isn't there like a visceral, you're losing, like you're removing yourself from the process in a way. I mean, I think for a lot of within the V-Ray community, I get the impression that there's a lot of people that like they like to get dirty. Like they like to get under the hood and you like to tweak stuff. And you kind of, in whatever way you interact and use the program, in some way you feel like you're making that image your own. You're not just trying to replicate. I mean, I know for a lot of people, like they're just trying to make it look photorealistic as possible and whatever, but it's like it takes that element, it takes a little bit of that satisfaction out when it's done, or it almost like it hinders you in some way. It's like you don't get to take part in the, you don't get to be creative. You don't get to be creative in the process anymore.
There's the creative pro, like
people said that about photography, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like being in a dark room was a creative process, but being in Lightroom is a creative process. Or if all of that stuff happened automatically in your photographs, if you imagined what you want to have your photograph look like tweaked just by looking at it and the computer did it.
Which is what iPhone app does.
I would still be satisfied. In fact, I'd be more satisfied because I could get more done.
Yeah.
I think there are very few digital photographers out there that when they click the button on the shutter or whatever, that they have in their mind's eye what that picture is going to look like until they load it up on their computers. Like, I feel like that's almost kind of a loss.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of a loss.
But you're
thing,
you're talking about specifically a professional digital photographer, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not talking about that.
But
I'm talking about everyone that's in this building that has a phone in their pocket that has a good lens that can take a picture. In the sense that everyone's taking pictures and everyone will be rendering. They just won't know to be calling it rendering. They'll just call it CG or V-Ray if we're lucky.
But I think even with the professional photographer, if you load that up and it can emulate what you're thinking, even if it doesn't get it right the first time, because you can react to it and it'll change something and you think and it changes the vignette or the whatever, right, as you go through those things. if there's some way for it to interpret what you, for you to control what that is, then I still think that that's a great creative outlet. Sure, hopefully yeah. it just happens more transparent.
I mean, basically the heel brush is like a baby version of that, right?
Sure.
And you see vignettes on every single photo you on Instagram or whatever.
Well, like, yeah,
everybody does a vignette.
It's all become
some sort.
Too easy.
Well, that's, and I don't know, is that, it's what's ironic about it is that they're all supposed to look like old bad photographs, right?
Right,
right.
Vignettes
right.
were actually a thing that you would avoid.
It's an lenses. Artifact.
It's an artifact, right?
Or like a lens flare, like that meant that you failed.
Yeah.
Because that you're letting the audience know that you're shooting something with a camera, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's in theory you wouldn't ever have a lens flare in space,
right,
or anything like that, you know. Right. But at the same time, there's a lot more in
no,
film now where you're
space.
Where you're aware of, yeah. But I mean, like in the shot, like there's like, where's this camera coming from? Like it just it lets the person know that there's someone right. out there shooting it. Like now there's a, it's perfectly okay to let the audience in on the idea. Or it makes it somehow realistic if you've got like camera shake and weird stuff. Mm-hmm. In space, it looks like somebody's holding a handheld camera just floating out there.
Right.
Like, camera's a part of the scene, whereas before it used to be like, you don't even want to think about their, where, you know, it's just you looking at something. It's not like, you're not aware of like a physical thing.
That was one of my favorite articles about gravity where somebody was like, how do they shoot this in space?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So just coming back to a point, the one of the things that came up at FMX this year was a conversation, and Vlado and I have been sort of starting to use this line a lot more, is the fact that people keep talking about real-time rendering, right? Real-time rendering, are you worried that Unreal is going to replace V-Ray? And our response to that has been, that's the wrong question. The question is, will
offline rendering go away?
Will offline rendering be replaced by real-time rendering? And yes. We said, yes. Then the second question is, will rasterized rendering replace ray tracing? No, right? Ray tracing is the end goal. Ray tracing is something that's been out there for a long time and was in battle during the offline rendering days, was embattled with against scanline rendering and beat them out because it was better and it was more accurate. And while the rendering took longer, and now it doesn't necessarily take as long, while the rendering took longer, you could get there faster because you weren't having to fake a million things to get there. So now ray tracing took over. Now there's no reason, now that rasterized rendering has gotten so fast and looks as good as it does in real time, it still can't do the things that ray tracing does. So we're in the same position we were before, but now we got to get ray tracing to be as fast as, you know, real time rendering, which it will be. Do you guys believe that?
Yes. 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you think it's going to
work? I think in our lifetimes.
Oh, I think in the next 5 years.
Okay.
I mean, I'm like, it'll take a lot of hardware. But it'll be there. I mean, we're already seeing inklings of it when we did on Construct or stuff like that, right?
Yep.
So we've thought about this. But I think ray tracing will start to render at 30 frames a second, 24 frames a second. And people are going to be able to create content really fast that way. Because then it's just a matter of what it does. So what does that imply? What do you guys think about real-time ray tracing for the average Joe?
I mean, for me, I'm excited about it because I think the power of visualization in the hands of many will lead people to be able to express and see their ideas and look into the future and test concepts and do things that will improve everything from the products around us to the, you know, the buildings we're in, the cars that we drive, all of those things. The more people that have the power to visualize, I think the faster we will propel ourselves into the future.
What are they visualizing?
Anything.
Like what? Give me an example.
So, I want to look at, I mean, there's anybody who has any idea, an inventor, somebody who wants to create anything. I want to create a product. I want to create, when I was a kid, I used to draw cars, right? Like I used to love drawing cars and so on. If I had the ability to actually do that realistically and say like, oh, this, you know, what if I had this design or that thing? Now you could do it, right? Now you could actually have a kid come up with anything, spaceships, airplanes.
Right.
You know, stuff that hasn't been thought of yet.
And to just make a model and put it in there.
Sure.
I mean, so...
Not only can they make a model, but they can actually live in it, experience it. Like, so to me, what's really fascinating about if you get to a place where ray tracing is just instant, it's not a process. Mm-hmm. That means that you could have a true virtual reality.
Right.
You could have true mixed reality, augmented reality, virtual reality, instantaneous, spontaneous, anything that you want to design. If you want to live in your dream house, right? I've talked about this before where I've got these ideas of all these things that I want to do in your dream house. That doesn't need to be a physical thing anymore.
You've got your Ready Player One world all set up for when we go to the dystopia.
Absolutely. You could just, you know, load it up and you're there. Mm-hmm.
So that... Okay.
So I sort of see it as like after reality, right? Like that's how I describe it, is when you get there, reality is no longer just the physical realm.
Okay.
Which is the scariest part of it too.
Yeah, like psychologically, it's going to be a real trip because you're always going to be having to question reality a little bit actively.
Yep.
As will the government, as well. Like, even like, for example, you're playing a video that for something from SIGGRAPH this year of various audio clips being played in Barack Obama's voice from different speeches and stuff that he gave.
Right.
But all being like matched really well to him during an interview.
Right.
Like at some point people are going to be emulating other people talking and people in power and, you know, there's a lot of really weird, interesting stuff that's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be a trip for us older people.
Well, because we're going to fight against it in terms of the nostalgia, right? The same way we say, like, you got to get outside and
play.
And play, right? Because that's how we grew up. But there is also the, what can you trust?
Yeah.
That's going to be a really...
And you have to instill that in your kids is what can you... Just like trying to instill in your kids what not to do on social media, which we did not have to be in our awkward teen years and think about.
Oh, yeah.
Which that's a whole level of something that I dread. And that's a whole... And just imagine like with what we could do with changing people's perceptions of reality, which is this constant... photorealistic other world or rendering or audio or any of this stuff.
That's fake news potential on a whole different level.
Tail wagging the dog.
Doesn't even matter. I mean, I think people aren't going to even care what other people care about. They're going to surround themselves in their own reality. And so fake or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's part of it, but let's not get too dystopian just yet.
Let's not go to Blade Runner just yet.
Let's not go full Blade Runner.
Can't
go full Blade
Runner. Road Warrior.
Yeah. But I think there are several things that are coming up. And you mentioned AR as something, right? I do think the ability to place things into things in reality through the phone or whatever you're looking through. Project Tango or whatever the iPhone thing's going to be. That kind of stuff where like, oh, put a furniture here, do that.
Well, we can relate to it.
Right.
Right. It's an easier leap of faith because you're not completely sensory deprived or you're not removed from the world that you're in.
Right.
And because as soon as you remove all of that stuff, then then the questions of like, do I live in the Matrix start to come up, right? Because
right.
What was Elon's favorite or his famous saying is like, well, the more we get to like AI, the more we prove that we're like living in a simulation.
The more we make, yeah, that wasn't AI. Yeah, the more that we're able to simulate the world, the closer it is that we are actually
in a simulation.
Actually living in a simulation. Which I don't actually. I had that discussion with Rudy Rucker about it, so it was pretty interesting. But rendering something, just you know, oh, I want to render you with, you know, or take a photograph with you next to someone else, right? And so I started thinking about it. It's just on the fundamental, because I think people need to get down to baby steps, right? Like, oh yeah, the future is this, whatever. And that could be really, really bad or really, really great. And we don't really know. So right now it's really scary. So we're just assuming it's going to be bad. But just for the immediate future, there's something about just rendering simple things in a simple interface. So what are your thoughts about Project Felix? The Adobe thing.
I think it's an awesome idea.
Right.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, some of the technology that they've built in there that, you know, uses deep learning or AI in order to like turn a regular image of a beach into say an HDR and mm-hmm. a 360. I mean, that's pretty awesome. But the easier you make it for people to express themselves,
right,
and to get whatever they have in their head into a place where they can see it, the easier you make that, the more exciting and addicting and you know powerful that will be. Because, I mean, we've all used, you know, 3D software as it's gone from its clunkiest to now, you know, being pretty much easier. And it's, you know, it takes a lot of time and energy to kind of get through the cockpit of things, right?
Like
using a Max or Maya or any of those tools is like, that's...
Well, now, yeah, with presets a lot of stuff. And I remember sitting in on... I was learning how to do render a bowl, like a fishbowl or a glass in Lightwave. And you had to like, you modeled the bowl and then you did a copy paste of the exact same geometry. And then you flipped the normals, but you didn't want to like merge points because you wanted to have the normals facing an opposite direction. Then you had to have the refraction number that you had written down that you had to enter into it to like simulate this glass. And then now it's just like drag and drop.
Right.
Yeah. It's like the whole process.
Yeah. Now the hard thing is choosing which bowl you want from a library of 25 million bowls.
It's so different.
Right. So that's, I think the 3D software is going to radically change.
Absolutely.
There's mm-hmm. no need for that anymore.
And one of the things that I find fascinating is a lot of the stuff that gets created exists.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like you're going to do a rendering of a car, a house or whatever. And a lot of these things, like they exist in reality and it seems it or materials, right? Like I'm going to visualize a car and I want to put yellow car paint on it. Well, that yellow car paint
right.
exists. So why generate it?
Why start from scratch on
right?
it?
Right. Like why try to create it?
Right.
It should just be there in a library well, for you. Well,
even just the advances in photogrammetry, right? People's like, okay, model that can of Coke. I was like, now all you got to do is take a photograph of it and you got a can of Coke.
Yeah.
And it's modeled and textured and everything.
I'm an inherently lazy person and I saw someone was doing a modeling demonstration of Moto and VR where they're holding the almost like nunchucks for a Nintendo Wii or something like that. And they're like pushing polygons and pulling and doing all this stuff. And I would just rather just sit at my desk and use my mouse. I don't want to do that gesturing. Like okay. Minority Report interface. Yes. Like that's the last thing in the world I want to do for modeling.
Okay. It's a little bit of a side tangent, but this conversation came up recently where we were talking about, will you be designing things in VR or constructing or building things in VR?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think they will.
I think it's going to, that's too much of a pain.
Can you imagine? I can't do that many squats.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
No, I think you could do a healthy number of squats, Chris. I don't doubt that.
But I mean, just like, no. I mean, they even tried to do the Minority Report interface for a Mac or something like that. And it turns out it's really, really tiring.
It's exhausting. It's like, yeah.
So the micro movements of your mouse and keyboard allow you to do work just as fast and way less movement.
Yeah, it's going to be like the, what's the Russian jet where he had to think in Russian in order to fly it?
Because, Firefox.
Yeah, Firefox.
The first movie I ever saw in the theater.
It's going to be like, really? Firefox.
That's the first movie I ever saw with my uncle, yep.
Clint Eastwood?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, he thinks in Russian?
Yeah. Yeah. He's so fluent in Russian, he can think in Russian.
Wait, hold on.
So he can
Doesn't pilot Facebook the... have something that they're doing where you're thinking? Oh, you're thinking and typing.
You're thinking and typing, really?
Yeah. It's you think about what you want to type and it'll type it for you. They're doing something like that.
Does it check your alcohol levels and then warn you not to type? Like, can you do it for texting?
Does it have a breathalyzer?
Yeah.
Can email and Merlot at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I think there is going to be a lot. Okay. So here's the thing, right? So the end of rendering, let's go back to that. The end of rendering is because we're not going to wait for the process anymore. And when you stop waiting for the process, then it enables a lot more. And then if no one has to wait for rendering anymore, then you can just make things constantly. And I think people are going to be making things constantly.
That's, to me, that's what I hope happens. Right. What I hope happens is that people will continue to make things constantly, explore more ideas, refine ideas further than they've ever been able to, like push past, take that time and now move, take that energy and that effort and move beyond it.
But still tell your client that it's taking time.
Right.
That's the
right. And well, still charge key. Your client.
Yeah.
More than.
Yeah.
Well, I think enabling creativity is a good thing, obviously. I just love the fact that, like, you can scan anything with your phone. I mean, and when you go to these new AR cameras, scanning things will be done on the fly in real time, right?
So that'll just be automatic. Like,
it'll be automatic.
It'll just be happening wherever.
Did
you
see
you are.
The one where Google Project Tango was automatically separating objects?
I didn't see that one.
Like, it takes this room, for example, right? And let's say it scans a room and it sees that chair, it sees David, it sees this, it sees those cans. And as it's doing things, it scans everything, but it sees it as a continuous mesh. But then it says those cans are separate things and it separates them out automatically. Figures out. And then in doing so, it is able to recreate an empty room. So it looks like what the room looks like empty. So then you can say, okay, here's the room empty. Now let me put a different chair in there and see what it looks like. And it's kind of amazing because basically what it's doing is just automatically making things constantly. And then you take that information and you say, oh, now give me all the information you know about the lighting in this room. And then on top of that, it's like, great, now put a, you know, put a bottle of Dom Perignon there, and then it goes back to your fake news. Like, no, we did not have Dom Perignon during the podcast. I wish we did, but we don't. I think ray tracing specifically is going to be what people are going to want to do at that point. Because that's it. That's the end goal.
Well, let's say that, however, right, ray tracing is the best thing that we have right now, but however it is that they're able to see something like reality, right? That a realism is the end goal.
Right. And deep learning could be the next process there.
It could be. I mean, there.
Who knows?
There could be the next generation of ray tracing.
Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be. And I don't want to, because, you know, a lot of our users out there, that's their livelihood is sitting around a computer waiting for renders to happen.
No,
life
but
is
not.
What happens between F9.
But it's not. Their livelihood is the creations that they're making.
Right.
And if they're getting paid to wait for a render, they're just going to have to figure out how to
still charge for that, or you know, or make sure that the value that they're offering is not tied to it. The same way, I mean, honestly, the same way that if rendering is charged by a time and that time goes away, like for the cloud, for instance, you render and that takes a time and you're charged by core hour or machine hour or whatever that is, because that's what the clouds are charging, right? And they're charging it because they have a machine that you're leasing for a particular amount of time that takes up power, et cetera. And so you're trying to utilize whatever system they have in place. But if rendering itself doesn't take any time, then you have to come up with a different scenario for how you monetize it and how you pay for it.
It's going to have to be like by image, not by time.
Or it's just a utility.
Right.
Yeah. Like ray tracing is just like paying your power bill.
Well, cloud time.
Sure. And it's just bundled as part of your cloud package. I'm making things up, but
And you get ESPN with it too as part of your cloud package. You get,
but that's what you have to pay for the most.
Yeah.
ESPN. It's the most expensive part of it.
Is ESPN time. But I don't use ESPN. There's something about the way that's going to be and the professionalism of it, right? Because a lot of people are still making professional images out there. A lot the need for synthetic images isn't going to go away. In fact, it's going to go up.
And you're still going to need to...
It's going to go up exponentially.
Right.
You're still going to need to tweak, and you're only going to tweak... You're just going to be able to tweak that much faster and not have to wait, because you're going to want to cheat lighting, and you're going to want to cheat perspective and all these different elements.
Or suddenly now you're able to create, 10 images where you could only do 5 before. You can create 20 images and look at spaces in more detail or whatever where you were limited, or now you can do animation and VR and AR experiences where you were just doing still renderings before. There'll be plenty of ways. I mean, we've always said that, from the beginning of time, no matter how much faster you could render times always stay the same, right? Because you end up putting more stuff in it. And when that stops, when you can no longer try to, like, when it's still super fast and you can't shove more in it, then you should be able to do more with it, hopefully.
Right. But I think the cloud time thing is an interesting argument, where it's who's going to pay for all this rendering, right? So even though it's going to be instantaneous and demand goes up, who's going to pay for it all? And maybe it's not necessarily going to be that expensive. Maybe it's, $1 a month or something like that.
That's what I'm saying. Like it could easily just become like paying your water bill.
Right. It's constantly happening. Do you think that there's going to be some – let's just go back to the different types of rendering and what people will do with them. Do you think there's going to be a lot of bad things that people do with rendering?
Bad, like just bad imagery? Bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You mean like imagery that doesn't look beautiful?
Right.
That will go up
a lot.
More exponentially than anything else.
So here's the reason I bring it up, right? Is let's... Because the precursor I see to this is cell phone cameras.
Yeah. Okay. It's exactly the same.
So this is what we're talking about is really just like we've seen this before. It's cell phone cameras, and early cell phone cameras. I don't remember those. They were terrible, right? They were grainy as hell. They were 320 by 240.
Yeah.
They were not good, right? And then maybe a little bit bigger than that. And then they got better and better and better. And then like, oh, the iPhone this and the iPhone that, and it got better. And I was like. Then suddenly everyone had an okay camera in their pocket. And then suddenly everyone had a really good camera in their pocket. And then that killed the point and shoot camera market. Killed it.
Yeah.
So no one needs a point and shoot anymore.
No, because you have one.
Everyone has one at all times.
Right. And it's better in some cases than some of them.
And it's more convenient.
Right. So, because it's already connected to the internet and everything else, right? So, what happened to the SLR market at that point?
your SLR market has, it's dropped, right?
Sure.
It's dropped, but it's also gone through its own disruption
with
as like well, right? Because
mirrorless cameras.
With mirrorless cameras, but also before that, your SLR started to become your video camera.
Yeah.
Right? So your SLRs became your professional video camera, which opened up the door for a lot of independent filmmakers and, you know, guerrilla shooting. And, you know, I mean, the Canon 5D, I think, is like, you know, almost single-handedly responsible for, you know, more independent films than just about anything in the history, right? Like, so it's gone through its own evolution of, well, now we're no longer just a professional camera. We're a professional video camera. We're a professional, like, we're being used for multiple things.
Right.
So it's had to adapt as well.
At the same time, like, Fuji's biggest seller and one of the biggest selling cameras on Amazon, period, is their Instax. It's their digital Polaroid camera. That's like, that thing makes so much money. There's actually talk about Fuji helping to invest in Nikon to keep Nikon afloat, because Nikon is really tanking right now in terms of sales. The thing with photography, though, is, like, you know, glass is glass, and you can do as much as you want to with the processor, and there's as much you can do with you can cheat depth of field with the bigger iPhone Plus option, but it's still a fix. Like, it's not.
Did you see the thing that someone posted, where this is how they shot all their shot on iPhone ads?
Oh yeah, and it was like a crazy tripod.
Was it?
Yeah, it's basically an iPhone with this massive attached lens to the iPhone.
Yeah, because you can't.
So it basically looks better. It's like, you're such a lie. But anyway,
yeah, because it's in your pocket. You've got lint on the lens and all these smudges and makeup.
Yeah. So, but you're right. I mean, the fact is, nonetheless, there are some fantastic photos that people take every day under iPhones, right?
Really, and famous street photographers are using iPhones. And
I've wondered for years, why don't they ever offer RAW formats? Because the RAW formats probably look really bad. My guess is that so much processing happens because, come on, math is math, physics is physics. That sensor on the back of your iPhone or your Android phone, as I would have, is teeny.
Yeah.
It's a really small sensor. I mean, the physics of the wavelength of light limit how much it can absorb on that size.
Yeah, there's some cheating going on.
So they process the shit out of it to make it look good, which basically means they make it look good.
Right. It's a software.
It's a software thing. Yeah. So I was like, you take a picture, like, wow, that looks great. And you don't know shit about photography. All you did is push a button on your phone and it's like, comes out great. And the point is, will they do the same thing to rendering?
Yes.
Right. So there's going to be a lot of deep learning or whatever it's going to do to just go make that look better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. You'll post-process it and you'll just be like, it'll make the vertical straight. It'll fix your, you know, the eye dynamic range. It'll fix the areas that are blown out, the contrast, all that. It'll just go boop, okay.
It's a little bit like when Quentin Tarantino spoke at Adobe Max last year. He spoke about how he really had to, like, borrow 16 millimeter cameras and learn all the film stuff. And it was, like, really an effort to do it. And now there's just so much access, which is great because everybody has access to create this added content. Mm. But at the same time, you're seeing lots of stuff where, you know, bad composition or, like, you know, things that you just wouldn't get. People are learning being able to learn on the fly while they use this stuff, but there's just so much access to it now that there's just naturally there's a lot of bad.
I bet you it's going to fix composition for you too.
Yep.
I'm sure.
It'll automatically just overscan everything.
Yeah, exposure. It'll fill in the rest with deep learning and data.
Yeah.
So, you know.
This is a tangent, I know, but one of the things that drives me a little bit crazy about the professional camera market or even the prosumer side, I don't understand why they have 25 different models of cameras.
Oh, there's no need.
It like the first thing that I would do is I would go, okay, we're going to have three models.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Like which? Because there's not that many Canons.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of Canons and Sonys.
There's a bunch of Canons, Sonys.
Nikons, it's like 4,000 something, 5,500, 7,200, 8,200.
And that, and then you get into like the kind of pro point and shoot down to the point and shoot.
Yeah.
And there's even, you know, there's a Coolpix 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 9,000, you know. Well,
Micro Four Thirds do that too with the Olympuses.
And don't the just, that's the first thing. And I'm sure that they've done more market research than I have on it. It doesn't make any sense to me. They're way too...
It's really hard to research cameras now. That's why places like DP Review.
How do you figure exist. Out what to buy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And 9 times out of 10, you'll follow a link, you'll go to Amazon and say, there's a newer version of this model here. Like, there's like,
yeah,
because they update it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Every year.
So, do you think, back to your point, that there's going to be choices or big choices that people make in terms of rendering, or will they just use whatever Google has, whatever Amazon has, whatever Apple has?
They're going to use whatever is in their pocket.
That's my point. Do you think you'll choose your render? Or do you think, okay, you choose your browser on your laptop.
Sure.
Right?
Do I, or has that really been chosen for me?
Well,
right.
Windows wants me to choose Edge, which I'm not going to do.
And Apple wants me to choose Safari.
Edge is the number one software used to download Chrome.
Right.
So, but what else? I mean, so there is a choice there. So you still have a choice.
Sure.
But
my choice is being limited by three mega corporations.
Right.
Right.
So do you think that people go, oh yeah, I want this, but I want to render with that? Or is it going to be, it just comes with that?
You might have both.
Yeah.
Right. I think a browser is a really good way to put it. Right. I think it might be more like a browser decision.
Right.
Just like, or it might be more like a smartphone decision, right? It's like, well, I have this because it's in my ecosystem and I use, you know.
So I'm going to continue using this because I'm familiar with it.
Right. And
yeah.
I have it because it's a natural extension of the stuff I already integrate with.
So I was kind of joking around. I said 5 years, right? What are you thinking?
I still think we're going to see major moves, inflection points. But I still think we're at least 10, maybe 15 years away from what I'm talking about of like after reality, where it's truly just, it's instant no matter what.
Right.
It like instant reality. I don't want to say instant virtual reality because that's not what I'm talking about, but
sure.
Instant rendered reality.
I should do a Price is Right because you said 5 years, so I should say 5 years in a day, and then that way I would win up until 15 years.
Right.
But I'm going to cut it right down the middle. I'll say 10 years.
So, but here's what I want to say will happen in 5 years, because I think you're right. We're not necessarily consumer level, but I think in 5 years, the very high-end stuff will start to move along those ways and start to put the writing on the wall for everything else.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the next 5 years... things like virtual production will start to go, oh shit, this is what it's about.
I think you'll see that the true unification of a real-time engine and ray tracing.
Yes.
And in a production scenario.
Yes.
Whether it's virtual production, high-end, right. Something cutting edge.
Yeah. And we'll start to see inklings of what that could possibly look like even this year.
Yep.
So I think that but I think that's what's going to happen in the next.
But that's
going
to be expensive still, like for the consumer level.
It's going to be expensive, right? It's going to be expensive, but it's going to open everyone's mind. Everything was expensive when it started, right? So, you know, cell phones used to cost $3,000 and the size of a brick, right? that's what we're going to be dealing with in the next 5 years. And it's slowly shrink down and turn into your phone and available for $1, you know, 99 cents a month or whatever. That's what I'm thinking. And I think that cloud computing is going to do it, right? It's going to be, Alexa, paint me a picture of a kitty cat. And that's what it's going to do. And that's what your daughter's going to ask for next time.
Yep.
Although she'll be 19 years old.
And Alexa will be like a hologram there. Yeah. And she will be able to change her poopy diaper if she needs it at that age.
I hope not.
I hope not too.
That'd be a pretty massive parenting fail on my part, but.
And it'll be really fascinating. I mean, we've been talking a lot about how it'll affect like entertainment and things of that sort. But I feel like in terms of like medical research and science and other stuff like that, it'll be really, really fascinating to see.
To see what?
What this technology brings to the table to trying to solve problems or trying to communicate problems too, like being able to really photorealistically convey like what's happening in another part of the world, for example, or stuff like that. Like I think it's going to, it enhances the ability to communicate on a grand scale.
Mm-hmm.
When so many people can create content that is so realistic and so it's so much easier where it's not like you have to pass a threshold to be able to even attempt to communicate visually like this. You'll be able to communicate viscerally.
I think the step beyond that is that it is going to exponentially increase our ability to simulate, right? So we can communicate a concept or idea or whatever, but we can also simulate outcomes, right? Or measure I'll use a really really simple example that I think everybody can imagine. So and I'll use one that I've referred to before. So let's talk about like you're designing your dream house, right? You're designing, or it doesn't have to be, you're just designing a house. Now, instead of it just being trying to like, okay, I want it to aesthetically be the way I want it, where things are, well, now I can make all of this, the decisions about how that gets constructed down to the millimeter in terms of how its energy efficiency works, how its maintenance is going to be kept, how all of the things that you can now go further and further and further than just saying, well, here's blueprints, go build me a house and take a bunch of 2x4s and figure it out. Right now you could actually be like, I have a house that performs, that does all of my solar calculations, that lives on the grid, that, you know, you can simulate more effectively what those, just imagine if rotating the house on the lot 5 degrees saved you, you know, 200% in performance on energy or something, or because of a wind simulation, or because of a shade or sun exposure.
Right.
To me, that's really fascinating. I think that's really exciting because that will have a ripple effect on huge things, right? A house, you know, okay, well, a house maybe saves you a little bit of money in your pocket, but if it's every house, or if it's every hotel, or if it's every structure in, you know, in the planet, every car, every, like, dialing those things in and being able to adjust it by any factor could have a massive impact on the future.
Yeah. Small tweaks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing that's fascinating to me about the faster things render is the ability to iterate, right? Iterations, even waiting 10 seconds. I mean, waiting 10 seconds as opposed to an hour or whatever for rendering is a huge jump. But the jump from 10 seconds to instantaneous is huge. Because it's still like when you're just rotating on something and it's still your hand is still on the mouse as you're changing things.
Yeah.
And your ability to just tweak and stop or whatever, that sort of real timeness as you do things really changes as opposed to tweak 10 seconds, tweak 10 seconds, tweak 10 seconds.
It kind of unlocks. I mean, the first time that I ever saw it when we were doing some of the cloud experiments on the cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Where like it's literally when you let go of your mouse, you had a full res HD frame. Mm-hmm. That's all it was already just a rendered full HD frame. It unlocks something in your head. Like you can't unsee it.
Right.
You can't. So having seen that, you go, oh my God, I can imagine how this process would work. Right. Like now I would have a whole different way of interacting that I wasn't able to do before, but now I'm going to, and even that's, you're starting at something that's new and you're going to practice that. And that's going to change and evolve as well as you get more comfortable with that thing. But I can never go back to unseeing that.
Right. I know.
Which is almost painful. It's almost frustrating.
It's unfair.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. When I sit there and I have a really complicated scene and I'm running, I was like, oh my God, it's taking almost 10 minutes to render. Forever.
At 4K stereo.
Ugh. Anyway. Okay. Well, I think this is good because I really want to sort of think about what that future is like. And I think that's, I don't know if people are going to agree with us so much, but I think rendering, the world of rendering as we know it will change and it will no longer be called rendering. It's just going to be what it is.
And we've always felt this way forever. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about it, you know, for the past 15 years.
We have, but I don't think a lot of our listeners have thought about it that way yet.
It's at least one of those things where you go, well, rationally, as things get faster, you know, it's a barrier that will go away naturally.
But we've also been living just based on what you said, that render times never go down because you keep adding more shit to the rendering, right?
But we've also gotten to the point where I'm like, what else can you add to it, right? Like,
right. And we're at the point now.
Have you seen a Michael Bay film? Have you seen a Michael Bay film?
People may not have thought of it, but at the same time, we're at a point now where we can actually see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I think people have a better glimpse of the potential with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, I have a hard time imagining rendering something like the last Planet of the Apes movie where there's like a billion apes. Like, what are you going to render that's more complicated than that? Yeah. With explosions and just...
Well, they didn't do it all in one shot.
I know, but...
It's just digital makeup.
Andy.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, I think this has been good because I think that also the other thing that it helps for me is that we're no longer going to be like this confusing lost art of like, I don't really know what this rendering thing is all about because...
Actually, it'll just go away. Like, we'll never just speak of it again.
Yeah, we won't even be part of the conversation. Right, you know, we're actually removing ourselves from the conversation.
Like nobody knows how, you know, they don't care how a TV works. They just care that the picture is on there.
Right. Yeah, it's true. You know, that brings up a good point because I'm thinking about like, so I pre-ordered the Tesla, right? The Tesla Model 3. And I've been seeing pictures of it. I was like, let's see what, because there's more of me, some more detailed pictures. That car is pretty much an iPad with wheels.
Yeah.
It's got a brake pedal, a gas pedal, a steering wheel, and
And a screen.
And a screen that does everything for you. And that's it.
Yep.
Compare that to Daniel Buck's 1946 Willys. Right? That car, he knows every bolt of everything that's out there and can constantly do whatever to fix and this. And it breaks all the time. And when it works, it's great and it's fun, et cetera, but it breaks a lot. So there's something to be said about rendering when it comes to like the 1946 Willys, where you know every single knob,
sure,
every single thing, to the thing where like, just get me to from point A to point B, right?
Absolutely.
And in fact, here's the other thing, to take another analogy, I'm buying this Tesla, right? So it's going to be my car and I'm going to go into it all the time. But they're already talking about a future where cars are just buses.
Sure. As soon as autonomous vehicles become the
driverless.
Yeah.
Why do you need a car? You don't need one.
It just comes and picks you up and drops you off. Because
basically everything at that point is a bus.
But it's kind of funny though, because you have, you know, decades now of people like really trying to design the optimum feel, like feels really good to drive and how the seat is and how the steering wheel feels and how the dials look and everything like that. And now you have to completely rethink like what's the most amazing, convenient experience or, you know,
comfortable feeling. It's a moving living room.
To just
sit. It's a moving house.
Yeah, just like right. to just sit in a like, chair and go somewhere.
You don't need a house anymore.
Barca loungers. Possibly.
You have a big enough moving vehicle. You don't need to be anywhere
right.
else.
Yeah, well, that's what sort of the point I'm making about the rendering
portion. Living in a van under the bridge.
down always by the, on the run.
Down by the water.
Jump. I mean, or it could at least be an extension of your house, right?
My like house
you could just park your living room and...
Sure. My house is a Johnny Cab from Total Recall. Yeah, it's true. Anyway, I think there is going to be a lot of disruption that's going to happen, and it's be interesting to see how rendering plays a role in that world.
And see all of those things that we were just talking about. I want as much rendering to be as available as possible for as many ideas to get figured, many ideas to be visualized and simulated so that we end up with the best thing as quickly as possible.
So let's go back to the original part of when we first started this podcast about Vlado. We like candy, right? So all these renderings are going to be like candy.
Yep.
And the only way we're going to get there is if we work together. Because that's the only thing that we're interested in that future. Are you scared of that future?
I'm a blatant optimist.
Yeah, I'm in too.
So I... It's funny. I might have answered this question with 100% optimism a year ago, but since the political changes, I have a wonder like what is actually happening in the minds of most people because I may have miscalculated where the status quo of people's brains.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Well, I think it's also, I think there's also a lot to be, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because let's go back to your other video, the video that you talked about where in this video, what they were showing is they had four different clips of Obama in this case. And they used an audio file and they made him say what the audio file was from the video clip. So they changed what he was actually saying from what he was getting from the audio file. And they even had him doing a talk when he was older Obama and took old video of him from when he was a kid in college and had him say those words, right? Very interesting. And then the other one where they had Putin and they had someone else that was on a webcam and moving their lips, and Putin was moving their lips. So basically using Putin as a puppet, right? What is fascinating about those two videos is both of them used political figures specifically to make their point.
Right.
So I don't know. When are people going to go fake news? I didn't say that. That's a fake video. And have enough to back it up to say that that's possible.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I mean, some of that is a little scary. I guess what I was getting at is that I'd like to believe that people are all good at their root level.
Well, no one thinks they're evil.
And want.
No one says, I really want to be evil today. I don't think Donald Trump thinks he's evil.
Dr. Evil.
But want progress. Thinks he's evil. Right? That actually want legitimate progress.
Sure. Well, no.
Based on hope, science.
There is a term. Conservative is that something that doesn't want necessarily to be liberal, right? So it's conservative because it wants to go back to certain areas, yeah. Right? So I don't know. I'm very anti nostalgia. If you want to hear about that, just listen to La La Land podcast I did. But I think that there's something. It is a little bit scary, but ultimately, we're going to go there anywhere. I mean, we're going to get there anyway, right? It's kind of like the people who got all freaked out because Facebook is using your data to sell you ads. Didn't stop anyone from using Facebook.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks for showing me the stuff that I might be interested in right. instead of stuff that
right.
I'm not.
Same thing yeah. with Google. It's like, oh my God, Google, is like, oh, they're evil. It's like, well, they're still number one for a reason. They give shit to you really fast, give you the information you need right away. Amazon is killing it right now with some of the stuff they're doing, right? Just killing it. So, and they're doing it with using data that's a little scary, right? Alexa data is kind of scary. It's constantly listening to you.
So, yeah, yeah.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but I'll go there quick.
Yeah, because we don't have much time. I'm doing another podcast in a little bit. But
my,
go ahead.
Like, Alexa is pretty cool. It's nice to have to be like, play this song, especially with a toddler, right? Because she wants to hear a song, and we say, play Wheels on the Bus. And
I'm going to teach her to say, Alexa, order me a dollhouse.
Right. or, you know, you say, you know, order dog food, and she'll just place the order or whatever. And that's actually, it's pretty good. The only thing is that with all the home automation stuff that you hear, the smart home stuff with the Nest and the electric lock and, you know, the garage door opener, and none of it saves time. None of it actually makes your life more efficient. A few things, like being able to order dog food, maybe that saves you a little bit of time, or pressing the dash button to get, you know, a new thing, a Tide, sent to you. But to be able to set your thermostat, I'm all for saving energy. I think that's a great idea, but it doesn't save me any time. Like, walking over to the thermostat is not something that was really bothering me, you know, before. Somebody needs to figure out how the home automation can actually make your life more efficient, can save you time doing something. Like, if home automation meant that laundry got done automatically, or dishes were done automatically, like stuff that I didn't have to, no longer had to worry about.
Right.
The maid from the Jetsons is what you want. You want that robot maid.
Then I'm excited. And really, the reason that I want rendering to be so pervasive is somebody needs to figure that out for me.
So here's the thing. Tell me if this is a stretch to take this, right? One of the things that Alexa does, or Siri, or Google Home, or whatever they are, is that you can say, hey, who is this? I asked it today, who played Johnny Rico in Starship Troopers? Gave me the answer, right?
Yep.
It just read it out. Before, let's just go back a few years. Before, you would go on Google, you would type that in, and you'd get a series of answers, a whole page worth of answers, and you sort of have to browse and figure out which one was the first one. Usually ones at near the top were better than others, but you had at least a page of data that you would look at. You'd hardly ever go to the second page, but sometimes you did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you just say it and it gives you an answer. And the only one answer matters, and it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. You're only going to get one answer.
Right, you trust it.
So Alexa and Google Home and Siri give you one answer. We've gone from a page of answers and choices, and you have to make the intelligent choice of what's the appropriate answer to, you just trust it. Whatever that answer is good. So now let's go back to rendering, where you're not sitting there, it's like, I wonder what would look better. Would this look better? Would that look better? Would do this better? It's like, nope, just render. Just done. Just like you hit the take a picture button on your phone and it's done. But I don't know. Is that true or not? Because Instagram, it's got a ton of filters, and the first thing you want to do is change it, right? Make it look like your own.
Same with Lightroom, same with any of this stuff. You're going to want to tweak a little bit.
Right. That's because it's something, it's a creation, I guess, as opposed to asking a question. I don't know. Maybe it's too far a stretch. But I still find it fascinating that now the world... The concept of search engine optimization is going to take on a whole new meaning when it comes to...
Yeah, if you're not number one...
You're none. You're nothing.
Yep.
You have to be the number one answer, or you're not in the running, or your business is tanked.
But it hadn't dawned on me how much now, like, you trust the asking tube,
right?
Right? To give you a real... So when I say, Alexa, what's the weather today? And, you know, she says... Whatever it is, I trust that it's right.
Now, where did you get that information? Did you get it from Weather Underground?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So it just tells you what it is, and that's what it is, right? So that's the thing, is like you're not having a choice. And if you want to buy dog food, guess where it's coming from? It's coming from Amazon.
Well, yeah, and it's coming from whatever I bought last. So right. That's at least easy.
Sure. But that's the thing, is that I find the asking tube very anti-net neutrality in a sense.
Sure. Well, and that's why everybody's making one.
Right.
That's exactly why everybody's making one, because they want to have, they're able to put a person in your living room.
Right.
But they're able to put like a sentient being in your life.
Yep.
You now have a Amazon or Google or Apple buddy.
That's just
imaginary friend.
That's just waiting and eager for you to say, let's buy this. Like, it's just ready to take your cash. That's its only reason to exist.
It's your own kazoo.
It's your
I saw
right? Like, it's your kazoo.
Don't toot your own kazoo.
That'll be the next one. That's what I would name it. Kazoo.
Kazoo.
There was someone had created between Google Home and Alexa, got it into a cycle where one was asked about setting a reminder, where one was like, Alexa, set a reminder called Google. Set a reminder. And then it says, yes, set a reminder called Alexa. It was just nonstop, just like going after each other. And it was just they were both fighting it out. All right. I think we've gone down the rabbit hole of this, but
sorry.
It's okay. I think that's the important thing for me, is like finding out where we want to go and what this is going to become and how we're going to get there. And I'm excited about SIGGRAPH this year, because just some of the stuff that we're going to be showing over there will be part of that future.
Steps in the right direction.
Steps in that direction. So I'm excited about where that is. And I'm glad that David's here. We're able to share a Coke together.
It's beautiful. Coke and a smile.
Coke and a smile.
From Christmas, apparently, because it's got a polar bear.
Yeah, you guys don't go through the sugar Coke very quickly, no, do no, you? You no. go through the zero and the diet.
That's at least 6 months old. All right, thanks, guys.